This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents The Blue Bistro by Ellen Hildebrand. Read for you by Christina Delane. Menu, summer 2005. Starters, corn chowder with red peppers and smoked gouda, $8. Shrimp bisque, classic Chinatown shrimp toast, $9. Blue Bistro Caesar, $6. Warm chavre over baby mixed greens with candy striped beets, $8. Blue Bistro crab cake, Dijon cream sauce, $14. Seared foie gras, roasted figs, brioche, $16. Entrees. Steak frites, $27. Half duck with Bing cherry sauce, boursin potato gratin, pearls of zucchini, and summer squash, $32. Grilled herbed swordfish, avocado silk, Mrs. Peake's corn spoon bread, roasted cherry tomatoes, $32. Lamb lollipops, goat cheese bread pudding, $35. Lobster club sandwich, green apple horseradish, coleslaw, $29. Grilled portobello and camembert ravioli with cilantro pesto sauce, $21. Sushi plate, seared rare tuna, wasabi aioli, sesame sticky rice, cucumber salad with pickled ginger, and sake vinaigrette, $28. Second seating, 9 p.m. only. Shellfish fondue, endless platter of shrimp, scallops, clams, hot oil for frying, selection of four sauces, classic cocktail, curry, horseradish, green goddess, $130, four people. Desserts. All desserts, $8. Butterscotch creme brulee. Mr. Smith's individual blueberry pie a la mode. Fudge brownie. Peanut butter ice cream. Lemon drop parfait. Lemon vodka mousse layered with whipped cream and vodka macerated red berries. Coconut cream and roasted pineapple tart. Macadamia crust. Homemade candy plate. Vanilla marshmallows, brown sugar fudge, peanut brittle, chocolate peppermints. Executive Chef, Fiona Kemp. Pastry Chef, Mario Subiaco. Proprietor, Thatcher Smith. Chapter 1. Breakfast. Adrian needed a job. She arrived on Nantucket Island with two maxed-out credit cards, 40 borrowed dollars, and three rules scribbled on an Amtrak cocktail napkin. She spent seven of the dollars on a dorm bed at the hostel in Surfside and slept with a cocktail napkin under her pillow. When she awoke the next morning in a room full of slumbering college students, she read the rules again. Rule 1. Become self-sufficient. Rule 2. Do not lie about past. Rule 3. Exercise good judgment about men. The last thing Adrian had done before leaving Aspen was to turn her boyfriend, Doug, into the authorities. Doug had been living with Adrian in the basement of the Little Nell, where Adrian worked as a concierge. He had been stealing money from the hotel rooms to buy cocaine, and he had stolen more than $2,000 from Adrian. Adrian quietly slipped into clothes and stashed her belongings in a locker, which was free until noon. She set out into the bright but chilly May morning with her money and the napkin, repeating a tip that a man had given her on the ferry the night before. A tip about a job. The Blue Bistro, 27 North Beach Extension. The man who suggested this place was a freelance writer who had been coming to Nantucket for over 20 years. He came across as a normal guy, despite his square, wire-rimmed glasses, 30 years out of style, and the way he licked his lips every 5 seconds, as though Adrian were a T-bone steak. They had started chatting casually over the ketchup dispenser at the snack bar. He asked her if she was coming to Nantucket for a vacation, and Adrian had laughed and said, "Hardly. I need a job. I need money."
"If it's money you want," the man had said, "the Blue Bistro is where you should go."
"I don't work in restaurants," Adrian had said. "I work in hotels, at the front desk. I'm a hotel person."
"There's a hotel down the street from the bistro," the man had said.
He paused, wet his lips.
"But, like I said, if it's money you want..."
Adrian walked to the North Beach extension, stopping twice for directions. The road was quiet. There were a few houses along the way, but most of them were still boarded up. One had a crew of painters working. Then, to the right, Adrian saw a parking lot and a one-story cedar-shingled building with a green slate roof all by itself on a stretch of wind-swept beach. Adrian stopped in the road. This was the restaurant. The hotel, as the man on the ferry had described it, was down the street on the left. She should go to the hotel. But then she caught a scent of roasting meat, and she thought about money. She decided it couldn't hurt to check the place out. A sign taped to the front door read, "The Blue Bistro, opening for its final season June 1st. Adrian perused the menu. The food was expensive, it sounded delicious, and her stomach complained. She'd trekked halfway across the island without any breakfast. She peered in the dark window, wondering what she might say. She had never worked in a restaurant before. She knew nothing about the business, except that it was, prostitution aside, the quickest way to make money. She supposed she could lie and say that she'd waited tables in college. She could pick up the skills once she started. Kira, her desk manager at the Little Nell, had told her that waiting tables was a piece of cake. Nantucket had been Kira's idea. After the whole disaster with Doug, Kira suggested that Adrian get as far away from the Rocky Mountains as possible. If it's money you want, Nantucket is where you should go. Adrian tried the door. Locked. She tapped on a window pane. "Hello?" She felt like the little match girl, hungry and tired, bereft and friendless. "Can you save me?" She thought of her father, at that minute probably elbow deep in a root canal. Since Adrian's mother died, his concern for Adrian's well-being seemed so heavy as to actually pull the corners of his mouth into a frown. He worried about her all the time. He worried that she was too adventurous, working in all these exotic locales where the men weren't necessarily principled. And he was right to worry. He was so right that Adrian hadn't been able to tell him how guests of the Little Nell had been complaining about cash missing from their rooms, and about how Kira had interrogated the battalion of Mexican chambermaids. When the chambermaids proved a dead end, Kira had come to Adrian and asked if she had any idea who might be taking the money. Adrian was confused about why Kira was asking her, but then, somehow, she realized that Kira meant Doug. Doug, who had lost his job in February, and whose behavior was becoming increasingly erratic. Doug, who traveled down Valley several times a week to visit a friend in Carbondale. Adrian had snuck down to their basement apartment while she was supposed to be at work. She found her hotel master key card in the pocket of Doug's ski jacket. And then, on a second dreadful hunch, she checked the tampon box where she saved her tips, the money for her future, which she had always thought of with a capital F. Money for something bigger and better down the road, a house, a wedding, a business. The box was empty. He had stolen her future. He had snorted it. Instead of killing Doug herself, Adrian followed Kira's advice and called the Pitkin County Police. They caught him robbing the Alpine suite in the middle of the day. He was arrested for larceny and possession, and Adrian left town in the midst of his court proceedings, flat broke. She had only asked her father for a small loan, $200, enough to get her back east on the train and set up someplace else. But he must have sensed something in her voice, because he sent her $300, no questions asked. Adrian heard someone shout, "Hey!" She whipped around. A man was striding toward her from a silver pickup truck in the parking lot. She smiled at him, squinting in a way that she hoped conveyed her innocence. "I'm not trying to rob you. I just want a job." When he got closer, she saw he had red gold hair and freckles. He was a man who looked like a 12-year-old boy. His hand shot out as though he'd been expecting her. "Thatcher Smith," he said. "Thatch." "Oh, Adrian was so nervous, she couldn't remember her name. The man raised his pale eyebrows expectantly, waiting for her to identify herself. "Adrian."
"Adrian?"
"Dealey."
"Adrian Dealey."
His tone of voice said, "Of course, Adrian Dealey," like they had an appointment.
"Can I help you, Adrian?"
Adrian opened her mouth, but no sound came out.
So much for knocking them dead with her confidence and charm.
Thatcher Smith laughed. A short, one-syllable, "Ha!" loud and spontaneous, as if she had karate-chopped his funny bone.
"Cat got your tongue?"
"I guess," she said. "Sorry. I came for a job. Is there an application or something I can fill out?"
"Application?"
He looked at her in a strange but pleasant way, as though he'd never heard the word before. "Don't you work here?" Adrian asked.
"I own here."
"Oh, the owner?" Adrian took another look at this guy. He was about 6 feet tall with sloping shoulders, strawberry blonde hair, green eyes, freckles.
He wore jeans, running shoes,
a red fleece jacket that was almost too bright to look at in the morning sun.
She couldn't tell if he resembled Huckleberry Finn or if it was just the name, Thatcher, like Becky Thatcher,
that summoned the image. He had a clean, friendly, Midwestern vibe about him. He wasn't handsome, so much as wholesome-looking. Adrian corrected her posture and cleared her throat. She was so destitute it was hard to feel impressive. "Would it be okay if I filled out an application, then?"
"We don't have any applications. It's not that kind of place. I do all the hiring face-to-face." "What kind of job are you after? Front of the house? Back of the house? Because I can tell you right now, we're not hiring any back of the house."
Adrian had no idea what he was talking about. She was after money, a thick wad of 20s she could roll out like a mafia boss. "I thought maybe I could wait tables."
"Do you have any experience?"
Thatcher asked.
"I waited tables in college," she thought,
but she couldn't make herself say it. "None," she said. "But I'm willing to learn.
Someone told me it's a piece of cake."
Thatcher laughed again.
"Ha!"
He moved past her to the door of the restaurant and took a giant ring of keys from his jacket pocket. Adrian noticed a wooden dory by the front of the restaurant filled with fresh soil. They probably grew flowers in the dory all summer. That was a nice touch. This was a nice restaurant. Too nice for Adrian. If she wanted to be self-sufficient, she would have to sell her laptop. "Never mind," Adrian said. "Thanks for your time." She turned to leave, making an alternate plan of attack. back to the road, down the street to the hotel. After she filled out an application there, she would have to surrender some of her money for breakfast.
"You understand," Thatcher said. "I can't exactly hire you to wait tables when you've had no experience."
"I understand," Adrian said. "I was just checking. Someone I met on the boat told me how great your restaurant was. He also said there's a hotel down here?"
"The Nantucket Beach Club and Hotel," Thatcher said. "But Mac won't hire you without experience either."
"I have hotel experience," Adrian said. "I just came from Aspen. I worked at the Little Nell." Thatcher's pale eyebrow shot up.
"The Little Nell?"
She nodded. "You've heard of it?"
"Of course, yeah. What did you do there?"
"Front desk," she said. "Concierge." Thatcher pointed his head at the open door.
"Are you hungry?"
The door of the restaurant swung open.
"I was going to have an omelet. Would you like to join me?"
Adrian glanced back at the sandy road. She should go.
An omelet, though, sounded tempting.
"I don't know," she said.
"Oh, come on," Thatcher said. "I hate to eat alone."
He ushered Adrian in. The roasting meat and garlic smell was so overpowering that Adrian nearly fell to her knees in hunger. What had she had for dinner last night on the ferry?
A hot dog that had spent 7 hours spinning on a rack and a cup of gluey clam chowder.
"Someone's cooking?" she said.
"My partner," Thatcher said. "She never sleeps. Follow me. I'll give you the grand tour."
When they stepped inside the front door, Adrian was overcome with anxiety. She checked her watch, a jogging watch with an altimeter. It was just after 10 o'clock. She was 3 feet above sea level. What was she doing? She had to find a job today. Still, she trailed Thatcher, trying to seem polite and interested. Free food, she thought. Omelet. Thatcher stopped at an oak podium.
"This is the host station, where we greet guests and make reservations. We have 2 public phone lines and a private line. The private line is very private, but sometimes guests get a hold of it. Don't ask me how."
He led her past a bar topped with a shiny slab of blue-gray stone.
"Now here," he said proudly, "is our blue granite bar. We found the stone in a quarry in northern Vermont."
The wall behind the bar was stocked with bottles on oak shelves.
"We only sell call and top shelf. I don't ever want to drink pop-off, and I don't want my guests drinking it." "Not in here," Thatcher said.
There were 2 small tables in the bar area and a black baby grand piano.
"We have live music 6 nights a week. My guy knows everything from Rodgers and Hart to Nirvana."
Down 2 steps was the dining room, maybe 20 tables, all with views of the ocean. The restaurant had no walls. It was open from the waist up. In winter, Adrian could see, they hung plastic sheeting to keep the wind and sand out. There was an awning skeleton off the back. They placed 6 tables under the awning on a deck, Thatcher said, and 4 foretops out in the sand under the stars.
"Those are the fondue tables," he said. "It makes a royal mess."
They returned to the bar, where the tables were set with white tablecloths, china, silver, wine glasses. Thatcher indicated Adrian should sit.
"Let me take your jacket," he said.
"I'll keep it on," Adrian said.
"You're going to eat with your jacket on?" he said.
She handed him her purple Patagonia Gore-Tex that she'd bought with an employee discount from the ski shop at the Little Nell, and lowered herself daintily into a white wicker chair, as though she were accustomed to having breakfast in glamorous bistros like this all the time. Thatcher hung up her jacket, then disappeared into the back, leaving Adrian alone. "The Blue Bistro," she said to herself. This was the kind of place that Doug would have called, disparagingly, gourmet. If it wasn't deep-fried or residing between two pieces of bread, Doug didn't want to eat it. Prison food would suit him fine. Adrian took a white napkin off her plate and unfolded it on her lap. She lifted the fork. It was heavy, beautiful, silver. And the charger, she flipped it over. Limoges. She replaced the plate quickly. This was the restaurant equivalent of checking somebody's medicine cabinet. Before she could inspect the pedigree of the stemware, Thatcher was back with two glasses of juice.
"Fresh squeezed," he said. "The last of the blood oranges."
He set the glasses down, then disappeared again. Adrian eyed her glass. "The last of the blood oranges," she whispered. The juice was the fiery pink of some rare jewel. Was it okay to take a sip before he got back? Adrian listened for noises from the kitchen. It was silent. She took a deep breath. The air smelled like something else now. Toast. Hunger and thirst, she thought. They'd get you every time. Thatcher hurried out of the kitchen with two plates and set one in front of Adrian with a flourish, as though she were someone very important. It was the best omelet Adrian had ever eaten. Perfectly cooked so that the eggs were soft and buttery, filled with sautéed onions and mushrooms and melted camembert cheese. There were three roasted cherry tomatoes on the plate, skins splitting, oozing juice. Nutty wheat toast. Thatch had brought butter and jam to the table. The butter was served like a tiny cheesecake on a small pedestal under a glass dome. The jam was apricot, homemade, served from a ball jar. Adrian dug in, wondering where to start in the way of conversation. She decided the only safe thing was to talk about the food. "This jam reminds me of when I was little," Adrian said, spreading a thick layer on her toast. "My mother made jam."
"Is she a good cook?"
Thatcher said. "Who?"
"Your mother."
Adrian paused. Rule 2, do not lie about past. But it was hard when someone hurled a question at her like a pitch she couldn't hit. "Yes." For Adrian, the silence that followed was studded with guilt. She should have just said, "She was." But then, by necessity, there would be tedious personal explanations about ovarian cancer and a motherless 12-year-old that she was never in the mood for. She would rather talk about her felonious ex-boyfriend and her empty future. It's okay, she thought. She would never see this guy again after today, and she vowed she would tell the truth to the next person she met. Her mother was dead. "Well," Adrian said, "this is the most delicious breakfast I've ever had in my life."
"I'll tell Fee," he said. "She likes to feed people."
Adrian ate every bite of her eggs and mopped up the tomato juices with her bread crust and drained her juice glass, thinking to herself, "Manners, manners. Turn the fork upside down on the plate when you're finished. Very European." If nothing else, this would make a great email to her father. Her first morning on Nantucket, she ends up eating a breakfast of champions in a restaurant that wasn't even open. She collapsed in her chair, drunk with food, in love with this restaurant. If she ever caught up enough to pay off her credit cards and refund her father with interest, she'd come here for dinner and order the foie gras. "Why is it your last season?" she asked. "Ah," Thatcher said. He pushed away his plate. Half his omelet remained, and Adrian stared at it, wondering how audacious it would be to ask if she might finish it. Thatcher propped his elbows on the table and tented his fingers. Even his fingers, Adrian noticed, were freckled.
"The time has come.
the time has come? That was a noncommittal answer, an art form Adrian wished she could perfect. So she, too, had asked a tricky question. In the interest of changing the subject, Adrian offered up something else. I just got here last night.
You've never been to the island before?
Never.
You came straight from Aspen?
I did.
I'm intrigued by the Little Nil. They say it's the best.
One of. Relais and Chateau and all that. They gave me housing.
In the hotel?
Yes.
That must have been sweet.
It was okay, Adrian said. She and Doug had lived in a studio apartment with his retriever, Jax, even though pets weren't allowed. No pets, no drugs, no stealing from the rooms.
Did you go out at night?
Thatcher asked. Sometimes.
My bartender here, Duncan, works at the boardroom in Aspen all winter. You ever go there?
Sometimes.
So you know Duncan?
Adrian tried not to smile. She knew Duncan. Every single woman between the ages of 21 and 39 who had been in Aspen for more than 5 minutes knew Duncan from the boardroom. There had actually been a picture of him in Aspen magazine making an espresso martini. Kira had been dying to sleep with him, and so she dragged Adrian to the boardroom during the week when she guessed the bar would be less crowded. But it was 3 deep from après-ski until close. It drove Doug crazy. He not only disliked gourmet, he disliked popular. Still, Adrian and Kira went so often that Duncan began to remember their drinks. A Cosmo for Kira and a glass of champagne for Adrian. He knew everyone's drinks.
He works here? He's the best bartender on the island, Thatcher said. Maybe in the whole country. All the men want to get him for golf, and all the women want to get him into bed.
That sounds right, said Adrian.
Where else have you worked?
Thatcher asked. All over, she said. The Princeville in Kauai, the Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, the Chatham Bars Inn. And I spent a year in Thailand.
Thailand?
Kat Samui, she said, thinking of Kip Turnbull, another one of her poor companionship choices. Chowang Beach. Have you ever been there?
I haven't been anywhere, he said. But that will change as soon as we close this place. I'm taking Fee to the Galapagos. She wants to see the funny birds.
Is she your wife? Thatcher drained his juice glass, then spun it absentmindedly on the table.
Maybe he hadn't heard her.
Maybe it was another trick question. Or maybe it was like when her father's patients asked Adrian if Mavis, the hygienist, was her mother. Not worth answering. Adrian noticed Thatcher wasn't wearing a wedding ring.
So you came here for a job, he said, but you have no restaurant experience. None? Not even Pizza Hut?
Not even Pizza Hut, she said. She envisioned herself with a tray piled high with dishes and food, glasses and drinks. She would drop it.
I don't know what I was thinking.
She had been thinking of money, of Rule 1, become self-sufficient. But she didn't belong here. She belonged down the street, at the hotel. The hotel front desk was the right place for Adrian. The pay wasn't great, but housing was almost always included. It wasn't loud or messy or hot, and the transience of a hotel suited her. All through high school, she had worked as a receptionist in her father's dental offices, 3 offices in 10 years, and now he was somewhere new again, the eastern shore of Maryland. She had attended 2 high schools and 3 colleges. Since her mother died, Adrian's life had been like a hotel. She checked in, stayed for a while. She checked out. I mean, don't get me wrong, this place is lovely, and the food is amazing. I'll come back for dinner once I have some
money,
Thatcher said. Friends, she said.
Thatcher poked the uneaten portion of his omelet with his fork.
"We open next week," he said. "We'll be booked solid for 2 seatings every night in July and August. Maybe, on a Monday night in June, you can get a table without a reservation. By 11 o'clock every night, the bar is full, and I have to put someone at the door. I have to hire a bouncer here, at a high-end bistro, because there is always a line out into the parking lot. People get in fistfights over cutting in line, like they're in 5th grade. I try to tell the people, it's just a cocktail. Ditto for dinner reservations. It's just a dinner, just one night in the landscape of your whole life. But what I have grown to realize is that it's more than just a cocktail, and more than just dinner. They want to be a part of the scene. And how can I deny them that? This place," he swept his arm in a circle, "has magic." Adrian might have laughed. She might have thought Thatcher Smith was full of himself, but she had been here for 30 minutes. She had eaten the best breakfast of her life, and now she couldn't even sit up, much less bring herself to leave. "You must be good at what you do," Adrian said. "Fee is good at what she does," Thatcher said. "She's the best. The best, best, best. Then we got lucky."
He pressed his eyes closed for a long second, like he was praying. Then he collected their plates.
"Fee will want these."
"I should go," Adrian said. She grabbed the armrests of the wicker chair. She was positively slouching. "I have to find something today." Thatcher held up a palm.
"Wait, please. Please, wait 30 seconds. I have an idea. Will you wait?"
She didn't have to move just yet.
She would wait. "Back in 30 seconds.
He gathered every dirty dish and utensil from the table, as well as the cake of butter and the jam that had caused Adrian to break Rule 2, and balanced them on an outstretched arm. He vanished into the kitchen. Adrian listened. If he was talking to this Fee person, she wanted to know what he was saying. It was silent, except for the sound of the ocean. She closed her eyes. She could hear the ocean. And then Thatcher's voice.
"This is the most popular restaurant on Nantucket. It has been for 10 years. The food is delicious. The food is fun. It's a fun place to eat. It is see and be seen. It is laugh and talk and sing in here every night of the summer. The Blue Bistro is what a summer night on this island is all about, okay?"
He was standing in front of the table.
"I can tell it's a special place," Adrian said.
"Really, I can."
"It just so happens, I got a phone call this morning from my assistant manager who spent the winter in Manhattan. He told me he's not coming back,"
Thatcher said.
"And so now I have a gaping hole in the front of the house. I need someone to answer the phone, work the book, arrange a seating chart, learn the guests, make everyone feel not just welcome, you know, but loved. Keep track of the waitstaff, the wine, the requests for the piano player, stroke the VIP tables, birthdays, anniversaries, the whole shebang. I need someone to be me. I need another me."
He laughed again.
"Ha!"
Like he knew what he just said was ludicrous.
"And when you first asked, I thought, who in their right mind would give a manager's position to someone without a day of restaurant experience? That would be foolish, bad business. But now, I'm thinking that what I need is someone with concierge skills. I need someone who understands old-fashioned service."
"I do understand old-fashioned service," Adrian said. Hadn't she warmed towels in the dryer for guests with a newborn baby at the Princeville? Hadn't she finagled a veterinarian appointment for a couple with a sick parrot at the Mar-a-Lago? Hadn't she arranged for private lighthouse tours while at the Chatham Bars Inn?
Most of my staff has been here since we opened 12 years ago. They love it here. They love it because Fee puts out the best family meal on the island, and at midnight, she sends out homemade crackers. 99% of the world thinks that crackers only come out of a box. And then here's Fee sending out baskets of hot, crisp cheese crackers. And after 8 hours of busting their asses and raking in $300-$400, the staff gets first dibs. And that's why they want to work here. Because of the crackers. And the money, of course. He grinned at Adrian. This is our last hurrah. The end of an era. I need someone good. I've never hired a woman for this position before. I've never hired someone without any restaurant background. But I'm not afraid to try. Well, to be honest, I am a little afraid.
Wait a second, Adrian said. She was confused.
What was happening here?
Was he offering her a job? She glanced around the restaurant. Even through the plastic sheeting, the ocean was brilliant blue. It made her head spin. That and the food smells and this man who was like nobody she'd ever met before.
He was as honest and as nutty as the toast. Your second is up, Thatcher said. Do you want the job?
Did she want the job? It would be a huge risk. But something about that appealed to her. Not a single decision she had made in the past 6 years had worked out all that well, and she had promised herself on the train east that Nantucket would be different. Working here would be really different. She was so busy thinking, should I say yes? Should I say no? That she never actually gave Thatcher Smith an answer. But he didn't seem to notice.
Good, he said.
His face came alive. It looked like his freckles were dancing.
You're hired.
2. Dr. Don at toothache.com. From addy12177@hotmail.com. Date, May 24th, 2005, 3:54 p.m. Subject, The Blue Bistro. Found a job. You're going to freak out, so close the door to your office and sit down, okay? I took a job in a restaurant, not waiting tables, not cooking, obviously. I am going to be the assistant manager at a place called The Blue Bistro. It's a French-American menu, $4 signs right on the beach, owned by a very nice guy named Thatcher Smith. His partner, Fiona, is the chef and she's famous, but she's a recluse. Never comes out of the kitchen. I haven't met her, though I will, I guess, soon enough. I'm making $25 an hour. Can you believe that? But I don't start for another week, and I need to buy some clothes and pay my first month's rent. Is there any chance you might wire me $1,000, please, sweet dad? I'm trying to put some structure in my life, and this time I will pay you back with interest, I promise. I rented a room in a cottage from one of the women who waits tables at the restaurant. Her name is Karen. She's waited tables since the place opened, and she makes so much money in the summer that after Christmas she goes down to St. Bart's for the winter and she doesn't have to work. She said the job I have is harder to get than a seat on the space shuttle. How do you like the Eastern Shore? Eaten any crab cakes? Love. 2. addy12177@hotmail.com. From Dr. Don at toothache.com. Date, May 24th, 2005, 5:09 p.m. Subject, You blew me away. No crab cakes yet. We're still getting settled in. The schmo in here made me a mess of his records, and the bookkeeper said she can't untangle his billing. But we'll figure it out. We always do. About your new job.
Mavis says restaurants are dangerous places to work. Sexual harassment and the like. Foul language in the kitchen. Alcohol, drugs. Everybody suffering from too much cash money. These are not people who floss, honey. And that's a joke, but you know what I mean. Be careful. You're an adult, and I know you like the way you live, but I am growing older by the day, fretting about the situations you get yourself into. Which brings me to the question of money. I won't go on about how you're 28 years old, or about how I'm not your personal bank. I will just wire you the $1,000 as long as you promise me that one of these days you'll pick a place and settle down. Love, love. To Dr. Don at toothache.com. From Addie12177@hotmail.com. Date, May 24th, 2005, 7:22 p.m. Subject, none. You're one to talk. 2. Addie12177@hotmail.com from Dr. Don at toothache.com. Date, May 25, 2005, 8:15 a.m. Subject, I'm blue without you. Just please, please be careful. Love, love, love. Adrian felt like one of the born-again Christians on early Sunday morning TV. She had been saved. New job, decent, affordable housing, complete with internet and a used 10-speed bike. The first morning in her new bed, she lay with her eyes closed and banished Doug Rydell from her mind once and for all. In the 6 months of their dating, he had lied to her about his drug use and stolen all her money. But it hadn't been all bad. At the bottom of her trunk rested a lovely pair of shearling gloves that Doug had given her when they first started dating, and there had been some nice walks, the two of them throwing Jack's sticks along the snowy banks of the Frying Pan River. Adrian felt some white noise coming from her heart, but she sensed it was because she missed Jack's. She loved that dog. So it was goodbye and good riddance to another man, another town, another phase of her life. Nantucket would be the start of sound decision-making, a healthy lifestyle, the straight and narrow. Adrian loved the island already. The historic downtown homes with their lilac bushes and their snapping flags, the wild, pristine beaches. It was so easy to breathe here. Adrian's new housemate, Karen Fryer, had been a waiter at the Blue Bistro since the beginning. When they first met, Adrian made the mistake of calling her a waitress, and Karen curtly corrected her. Waitresses worked at diners in the 1950s, okay? This is fine dining, and I bust my ass as hard as any man out there. Karen was tall and extremely thin. She had been with a ballet company in New York City for 3 years before she accepted that she was never going to make a living at it. That's when she got sucked into what she called the life of hash and cash. Karen had a long, graceful neck, regal posture, a way of floating from place to place rather than walking. She wore her dark auburn hair in a bun so tight it made Adrian's head ache just to look at it. Karen knew the ropes at the bistro. She knew the dirt on every person who ate there and every person who worked there. And although Adrian was dying to mine the woman for information, most pressingly about the chef, Fiona, she intuited that she should proceed with caution. Adrian had already done a little bit of research on her own. The day she was hired, she dug up 3 articles about the Blue Bistro from the magazine archives of the public library, one in Cape Cod Life, August 1997, one in Bon Appetit, June 2000, and one in Travel and Leisure, May 2003. The articles offered variations on the same information.
The Blue Bistro was wildly popular because it was the only restaurant on the beach on Nantucket and because of the food. T&L called the food consistently delightful. Fiona Kemp is one of the most talented chefs in New England today. Cape Cod Life said, Fiona Kemp never does interviews, but her plates speak volumes. She is a master at giving every diner an unforgettable taste experience. Each article referred to Thatcher and Fiona as partners, and Bon Appetit mentioned that they had grown up together in South Bend, Indiana. Fiona attended the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York, and she landed her first job as a line cook at the Wawanet Inn on Nantucket. Thatcher was quoted as saying, "She convinced me to come out to the island for a visit in 1992. She'd found a great spot for a restaurant. Once I saw it, I decided to leave the family business in South Bend behind. We were up and running the following year." Thatcher went on to explain how, the first two summers, they struggled to get the menu right. "We were trying to make the food really grand. It took us a while to figure out that fancy French food wasn't the answer. The answer was simple, fresh, fun. Food you'd want to eat on the beach." A photograph of Thatcher appeared in each article. Thatcher holding up a bowl of coral-colored soup. Thatcher in a white wicker chair grinning in a Notre Dame baseball cap. And the most surprising was a photo of Thatcher in a navy blazer and red paisley tie standing behind the oak podium. It was Huck Finn, all gussied up. There were no pictures of Fiona. Karen had rented the same two-bedroom cottage on Hooper Farm Road for as many years as she'd worked at the restaurant, and she took a roommate every year. Thatcher had asked Karen, as a favor to him, to rent the spare bedroom to Adrian. Adrian had been forced upon her, basically, because nobody turned Thatcher down, and certainly not in the final year, when there might be a farewell bonus for loyal employees to consider. Adrian was just happy for housing, and not only housing, but company. In the morning, Adrian and Karen sat at the kitchen table drinking espresso. The following night was the first night of work, the soft opening. Adrian was unsure of what to wear. She had two trunks of clothes from her days on the front desk, but somehow looking nice at a day job clothing didn't seem suitable for representing the front of the house at the hottest restaurant on Nantucket. She asked Karen. "The other assistant managers have all been men," Karen said. "They dressed like Thatch."
"He wears a coat and tie," Adrian said. "A tie if there's somebody big on the books. Otherwise, he wears blazers and shirts from Thomas Pink, and Gucci loafers, a new pair every year. At first, he couldn't stand the idea of spending $300 on shoes, coming from Indiana and all. But he grew into it, and now his loafers are a part of the whole show. They're as much of an institution as the blue granite and the crackers."
"I heard about the crackers," Adrian said.
"Let's look in your closet," Karen said. "Another espresso?"
"No, thanks," Adrian said. The espresso machine was Karen's. She hauled it between Nantucket and St. Bart's the same way Adrian schlepped her laptop. Karen even owned a set of demitasse cups and saucers. It was a very sophisticated setup, except Adrian discovered she didn't like espresso. It tasted like a cross between gasoline and tree bark. But she'd accepted a cup to be polite, and now that the caffeine was coursing through her blood, she was ready to leap out of her skin. Soft opening tomorrow night. She needed to find something to wear. As she feared, Karen deemed every item of clothing Adrian owned too frumpy, too corporate, too Banana Republic.
"You've worked in resorts for 6 years," Karen said. "And you haven't learned how to shop?"
Karen took her to Gypsy on Main Street, where Adrian's pulse reached an unsafe speed. The clothes were so gorgeous and so expensive that Adrian thought she was going to pass out.
"We have to go someplace else," Adrian said.
"I can't afford any of this."
"Oh, come on," Karen said. You're going to be making more money than you know what to do with.
I doubt that, Adrian said.
Still, she mustered enough courage to browse the sale rack, and there she found two pairs of silk pants and a stunning Chloe dress that was marked down 70%.
Adrian put the dress back, but bought both pairs of pants. Then, at the last minute, she decided to try the dress on. Karen whistled.
You can't pass that one up.
Adrian scowled at herself in the mirror. Becoming self-sufficient did not mean spending exorbitant amounts of money on last year's designer clothing. She would probably get fired her first week and end up living in the back of a junkyard car. But no, she couldn't pass the dress up. Adrian bought the dress, her hand trembling as she signed the credit card slip, a combination of the price and the espresso. Once she had enough clothes to get her through the weekend, she felt better about starting this new life. This, after all, was what she had needed, a clean slate. A chance to get it just right. Chapter 2. Menu Meeting.
Let's pretend for 20 minutes of every day that the restaurant business is about food, Thatcher said.
Adrian wrote on a yellow legal pad, restaurant equals food. She sat at one end of a very long table, a 12-top, in the dining room with the rest of the staff, 5 waiters, 3 bussers, the bartender, Duncan, and a young female barback. Thatcher was the professor. Adrian was the nerdy kid who took too many notes. But Thatcher had asked her to please absorb every word I say, so that this, the soft opening, might go as smoothly as possible. The dining room had been completely transformed since the morning of her breakfast. The wood floors had been polished. The wicker chairs had been cleaned. The plastic sheeting was rolled up so that every table had an unimpeded view of the gold sand beach and Nantucket Sound. Landscapers had planted red and pink geraniums in the window boxes that lined the outer walls of the restaurant and in the wooden dory out front. All of the tables were set for service, and the waiters, 3 veterans, 2 newcomers, had arrived early to polish the glasses. The waiters wore black pants, crisp white shirts, and long white aprons. The busboys and the barback wore black pants and white oxfords. Duncan wore khakis, a blue silk shirt, a sailboat print tie, and black soccer sneakers. Adrian had decided on her new pink silk pants with a gauzy white top and a pair of Kate Spade slides that she bought off the sale rack at Neiman's in Denver. Her black hair was short enough that she only had to blow it dry and fluff it. She would have looked okay, except that morning had been so sunny and warm that she had headed off to the beach. She came home sunburned, and when she applied her fuchsia lipstick, it matched not only her toenail polish and her new pants, but the stripe across her cheeks and the bridge of her nose. 10 minutes ago, when she'd arrived, Thatcher had narrowed his eyes at her, just the way her father would if he could see her. She was certain she was going to get a word about sunscreen.
Diaphanous top on the first night, he said. Gutsy. I like it. What size are you?
Was this any of his business?
A 6. He nodded.
The shoes won't work, though.
He checked his watch. She thought it was a Patek Philippe.
But you don't have time to go home and change. Sorry. Menu meeting at table 9, right now.
He handed her the yellow legal pad.
Please absorb every word I say. You're trailing me tonight. Soft opening, that means friends of the house. Nobody gets a bill for anything but alcohol, and everything has to be as close to perfect as possible. Then tomorrow night, close isn't going to cut it.
Now he was lecturing. The professor in his Gucci loafers and $20,000 watch. Everyone around the table sat in rapt attention. This was the big time. The Harvard Business School of Resort Dining.
I thought Fee might come out and tell you about the food, but she's in the weeds back there. No additions tonight.
There are a lot of our standards on this year's menu, but there's some new stuff, too. And since we have 2 new wait people, 2 new bussers, and a new assistant manager, and since the rest of you spent all winter skiing bumps or sizzling in the equatorial sun, I'm going to run through the menu with you now. Everyone's met Adrian Dealey, right?
Thatcher held out his arm to introduce Adrian, and the staff turned to look at her. She blushed on top of her sunburn.
On the floor, Adrian is going to be my second in command, taking over for Kevin, who conned his way into the maitre d' job at Kraft in New York. As some of you know, Fee and I might be gone more often this summer than we've been in years past, and Adrian is going to run the floor in my stead and alongside of me. But let's give her a week or two to learn what it is we do here. She has never worked in a restaurant before. Not even Pizza Hut.
Adrian was sure she heard groans. But then one of the waiters, shiny bald, black square glasses, said, "Let's welcome Adrian."
"Welcome, Adrian," the rest of the staff echoed.
Adrian smiled at her yellow legal pad. She heard someone say,
"You drink champagne."
She looked up. Duncan was pointing at her. She nodded, overcome with a bizarre shyness. He remembered her. Hopefully, he didn't remember her as the woman whose boyfriend had been ripping off the esteemed patrons of the Little Nell.
"You drink champagne?" Thatcher said. "That gives me an idea. Make a note to ask me about champagne. Now, let's pretend for 18 minutes that the restaurant business is about food."
Adrian never worked in restaurants, but she loved to eat in them. Until her mother died of ovarian cancer when Adrian was 12, her family had lived in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, and her father ran a successful dental practice in King of Prussia. They used to eat out all the time, at the original Bookbinders in downtown Philadelphia, the City Tavern, and her mother was a sucker for all of the new, funky cafes on South Street. What was it Adrian loved about restaurants? The napkins, folded like flowers. The Shirley Temples, with maraschino cherries speared on a plastic sword, seeing her endless reflection in the mirrors of the ladies' room. The pastel mints in a bowl by the front door. After her mother died, and Adrian and her father took up with wanderlust, Adrian became exposed to new foods. For 2 years, they lived in Maine, where in the summertime they ate lobster and white corn and small wild blueberries. They moved to Iowa for Adrian's senior year of high school, and they ate pork tenderloin, fixed 17 different ways. Adrian did her first 2 years of college at Indiana University in Bloomington, where she lived above a Mexican cantina, which inspired a love of tamales and anything doused with habanero sauce. Then she transferred to Vanderbilt in Nashville, where she ate the best fried chicken she'd ever had in her life, and so on, and so on. Pad Thai in Bangkok, stone crabs in Palm Beach, buffalo meat in Aspen. As she sat listening to Thatcher, she realized that though she knew nothing about restaurants, at least she knew something about food.
This year, as every year, the first thing that hits the table after the cocktails is the bread basket.
There was an appreciative moan, and Karen arched her eyebrows at Adrian from across the table.
"The bread basket is one of 2 things. Bruno, go into the kitchen and get me 2 baskets, one of each, please."
The bald waiter zipped into the kitchen. Bruno. Adrian mentally pinned the name to him. Bald Bruno, who had welcomed her earlier. His voice had a little bit of a sachet to it, like he was from the South or was gay. She would ask Karen later. Bruno reappeared with 2 baskets swathed in white linen napkins and a ramekin of something bright yellow. Thatcher unveiled 1 basket.
"Pretzel bread," he said.
He held up a thick braid of what looked to be soft pretzel, nicely tanned, sprinkled with coarse salt.
"This is served with Fee's homemade mustard, so right away, the guest knows this isn't a run-of-the-mill restaurant. They're not getting half a cold baguette here, folks, with butter in the gold foil wrapper. This is warm pretzel bread, made on the premises, and the mustard, ditto. 9 out of 10 tables are licking the ramekin clean. He handed the bread basket to a waiter with a blonde ponytail, male. Everyone at the table was male except for Adrian, Karen, and the young barback who was hanging on to Duncan's arm. The ponytailed waiter, name? Tore off a hunk of bread and dipped it in the mustard. He rolled his eyes like he was having an orgasm. The appropriate response, Adrian thought. But remembering her breakfast, she guessed he wasn't faking it. The other basket contains our world-famous savory donuts, Thatcher said. He whipped the cloth off like a magician, revealing 6 golden brown donuts. Donuts? Adrian had been too nervous to think about eating all day, but now her appetite was roused. After the menu meeting, they were going to have a family meal. The donuts were deep-fried rings of a light, yeasty, herb-flecked dough. Chive, basil, rosemary. Crisp on the outside, soft on the inside. Savory donuts. Who wouldn't stand in line for these? Who wouldn't beg or steal to access the private phone line so that they could make a date with these donuts? If someone wants bread and butter, and it happens every night, we also offer warm Portuguese rolls, but the guest has to ask for it. Most people will be eating out of your hand after these goodies. Thatcher disappeared into the kitchen. Seconds later, he was out, carrying another plate. All VIPs get the same canapé, he said. Years ago, Fee knocked herself out dreaming up precious little amuse-bouche, but then we came up with the winner, chips and dip. He set the plate on the table next to Adrian, and she nearly wept with gratitude. He was standing beside her now, so she could study his watch. Her suspicions were confirmed. It was a Patek Philippe, silver, rectangular face, black leather band. The watch matched Thatcher's shoes, the Gucci loafers, black with sleek silver buckles. Adrian had to admit, when he was dressed up, the man had a certain elegance. You're getting the idea now, right? We have pretzels and mustard. We have donuts. And if we really, really like you, we have chips and dip. This is fun food. It isn't stuffy. It isn't going to make anyone nervous. The days of the waiter as a snob, the days of the menu as an exam the guest has to pass, are over. But at the same time, we're not talking about cellophane bags here, are we? These are hand-cut potato chips with cream fraiche and a dollop of beluga caviar. This is the gift we send out. It's better than Christmas. He offered the plate to Adrian, and she helped herself to a long, golden chip. She scooped up a tiny amount of the glistening black caviar. Just tasting it made her feel like a person of distinction. Adrian hoped the menu meeting might continue in this vein, with the staff tasting each ambrosial dish. But there wasn't time. Service started in 30 minutes. Thatcher wanted to get through the menu. The corn chowder and the shrimp bisque are cream soups, but neither of these soups is heavy. The Caesar is served with pumpernickel croutons and white anchovies. The Chavre salad is your basic mixed baby greens with a round of breaded goat cheese. And the candy striped beets are grown locally at Bartlett's farm. Ditto the rest of the vegetables, except for the portobello mushrooms that go into the ravioli. Those are flown in from Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. So when you're talking about vegetables, you're talking about produce that is grown in Nantucket soil, okay? It's not sitting for 36 hours on the back of a truck. Fee selects them herself before any of you people are even awake in the morning. It's all very Alice Waters, what we do here with our vegetables. Thatcher clapped his hands.
He was revving up, getting ready for the big game. In the article in Bon Appetit, Thatcher had mentioned that the only thing he loved more than his restaurant was college football.
"Okay, okay," he shouted.
It wasn't a menu meeting, it was a pep rally. "The most popular item on the menu is the steak frites. It is 12 ounces of aged New York strip grilled to order, and please note you need a temperature on that, served with a mound of garlic fries. The duck, the sword, the lamb lollipops, see? We're having fun here, are all served at the chef's temperature. If you have a guest who wants the lamb killed, by which I mean well done, you're going to have to take it up with Fiona. The sushi plate is all spelled out for you. It's bluefin tuna caught 40 miles off the shore. And the sword is harpooned in case you get a guest who has just seen a Nova special about how the Canadian coast is being overfished." Just then the door to the kitchen opened, and a short olive-skinned man carried out a stack of plates, followed by his identical twin, who carried a hotel pan filled with grilled steaks. The smell was unbelievable.
"That's your dinner," Thatcher said. "I just have a few more things."
A third guy, taller with longer hair, but the same look of Gibraltar as the other two men, emerged with a hotel pan of French fries and two bottles of ketchup dangling from his fingers. The staff shifted in their chairs. Adrian wiggled her feet in her slides. "What," she wondered, "is wrong with my shoes?"
"The last thing I want to talk about is the fondue. Second seating only, four tops only. Otherwise, it's a logistical nightmare. You all know what fondue is, I assume, remembering it from your parents' dinner parties when you were kids. We put out a fondue pot with hot peanut oil, and we keep it hot with Sterno. So already, servers, visualize moving through the crowded dining room holding a pot of boiling oil. Visualize lighting the Sterno without setting the tablecloth on fire. Adding this to the menu tacked thousands of dollars to our insurance policy. But it's our signature dish. The table gets a huge platter of shrimp, scallops, and clams dredged in seasoned flour. They get nifty fondue forks. What they're doing, basically, is deep frying their own shellfish. Then we provide sauces for dipping. So imagine it's a balmy night. You've spent all day on the beach, you've napped, you've showered, you've indulged in a cocktail or two. Then you're led to a table in the sand for the best all-you-can-eat fried shrimp in the world while sitting under the stars. It's one of those life-is-good moments.
Thatcher smiled at the staff.
"This is our last year. Everything we do this year is going to reflect our generosity of spirit. You will notice I never use the word customer or client. The people who eat at this restaurant are our guests. And like good hosts, we want to make our guests happy. Now go eat. And for those of you who are new, all wine questions go to me, and familiarize yourself with the dessert menu while you chow."
Everyone charged for the food. A few more cooks in spiffy white coats materialized from the kitchen. They were all lean and muscular with skin like gold leaf and dark hair. Latino? They looked alike to Adrian. Maybe they were brothers. But this, surely, was just an example of her ignorance. The most handsome of the bunch stood in front of Adrian in line. He looked her up and down.
Checking her out?
Her diaphanous top. Then he grinned.
"Man," he said, "everyone's in the shit back there. Except for me, of course, but I have the easy job."
Adrian peered over his shoulder at the hotel pan filled with steaks and a vat of béarnaise. How had she missed that?
"What's the easy job?" she asked. "I'm the pastry chef," he said. "You're new?"
Adrian. She offered him her hand.
"Mario, how are you doing? I heard about you. Fiona's been making a big deal all week because you're a woman.
Adrian studied him. Although he looked like he hailed from the Mediterranean, his accent said Chicago. He was several inches taller than she was. His hair was buzzed down to his scalp, and he had very round black eyes. Beautiful eyes, really. His skin was shiny with sweat, and inside the collar of his chef's jacket at the base of his neck, she saw a scar, a raised purple welt.
"I'm sorry? Fiona's making a big deal about me?" Adrian said. "I don't even know her. I've never met her."
"I know," he said cheerfully.
He helped himself to a steak, gave it a generous ladle of béarnaise, plopped a handful of golden fries right on top. Adrian followed suit. There was salad, too, a gorgeous, crisp-looking salad that had already been lightly dressed with something. Adrian mounded her crowded plate with salad, thinking about what Thatcher had said about the vegetables. Fiona picked them out before the sun was up. Fiona. Fiona, whom Adrian could not pick out of a crowd of two, was making a big deal about her. Adrian needed to question this Mario person further to find out what was being said. Fiona Kemp, the reclusive genius chef, had been making a big deal all week because Adrian was a woman. What had Thatcher said? He'd never hired a woman for the job before? Adrian poured herself a tall glass of water, then sat down next to the waiter with the blonde ponytail. Mario took his dinner back to the kitchen. Adrian felt weak, like her legs were made of baby greens. Before she got here, she had been nervous to meet Fiona. Now, she was afraid. No one was talking. The only sounds were knives and forks on plates, the occasional palm tapping the bottom of the ketchup bottle. Two waiters were studying the menus, the new guys, one pale and thin with a bushy head of loose curls and a weak chin, and one handsome dark-haired guy wearing two gold hoop earrings. The guy with the earrings was reading the menu so intently that he shot food off his plate when he cut his steak. Adrian concentrated on eating carefully, one drop of ketchup on the diaphanous white blouse, and, well, there was no time to go home and change, and nothing at home to change into. Adrian ate her steak, the béarnaise, the garlicky fries. Did she even need to say it? It was steak frites from a rainy day in Paris dream. The steak was perfectly seasoned, perfectly cooked, pink in the middle, juicy, tender. The salad was tossed in a lemony vinaigrette, but it tasted so green, so young and fresh that Adrian began to worry. This person, Fiona, had a way. If the staff meal tasted this good, then the woman was possessed, and Adrian didn't want a possessed woman on her case. The whole thing had been too easy, she saw now. She shouldn't be here. She didn't belong here. But she had been swept along by her own greed and by Thatcher, who had been described in a major food magazine as charismatic, compelling. He could talk a teetotaler into a bottle of Chateau Lafite. He had convinced her, somehow, to take this leap. Adrian thought it was weird that she hadn't even met Fiona, but she'd chalked it up to the fact that Fiona was a recluse, a culinary Greta Garbo or J.D. Salinger. Were Thatcher and Fiona married? Engaged? Committed? Together? Dating? Or, worst of all, exes? She had to ask Karen. Karen, who was three seats down eating a plate of only salad, drinking, yes, espresso. Karen had advised Adrian to keep a toothbrush and toothpaste at the restaurant. Karen knew everything. There was soft female laughter, as jarring to Adrian as a tray of stemware crashing to the floor. She looked around to see Duncan and the barback engaged in quiet conversation. They looked so familiar, so at ease, The girl grabbed Duncan's forearm when she talked. Adrian wondered if something was going on between them. The girl was young, in college still, Adrian guessed. She had curly, light brown hair and big brown eyes. Big boobs, too, and her Oxford was unbuttoned one too far. Adrian was one to talk. Diaphanous top, gutsy, I like it. Diaphanous didn't mean transparent. You certainly couldn't see anything. Besides, she was wearing a very sturdy, very modest beige bra. And her shoes. What exactly was wrong with her shoes? Adrian did not like the idea that while she was getting moved into the cottage, setting up her bank account, and strictly adhering to all three of her rules, someone she'd never laid eyes on was down there talking about her. News of the diaphanous top and the inappropriate shoes had probably already made it back into the kitchen. What would Fiona say to that? Thatcher appeared, holding a flute of pink champagne. You're all done. It wasn't a question, though Adrian still had food on her plate, and she didn't want to be separated from it. He nodded toward the front door. Service starts in 10 minutes. Mr. and Mrs. Parrish will be here at 6. There are some other things I have to explain. Adrian cleared her plate into 3 bins the way she'd seen others doing, though it killed her to throw food away. She followed Thatcher, who was holding the champagne out in front of him. You like dinner? He asked. It was delicious. This felt like a gross understatement, and she wondered what words might convey the physical pain she felt at scraping her plate. Did you eat? He laughed the old karate chop. Ha! It was a noise he made not when something was funny, she realized, but when something was preposterous. No, I eat with Fee after service. Is she your wife? Girlfriend? Can someone please turn on the lights so I can see? Is this the restaurant's last year because you've split up? Is the fact that I'm a woman going to be a bigger problem than you initially anticipated? Adrian followed him silently, but not silently at all. Her shoes were making a tremendous racket against the wooden floors. I'm clomping, she said. Thatcher turned to her. Yes, the shoes, I told you. You have to watch the way you walk. Tomorrow night, different shoes. A soft sole, slippers or something, but elegant, okay? Adrian deducted another $100 from her rapidly diminishing savings for elegant slipper shoes. Fine for pants, but the dress she'd bought would look funny without heels. Taking this job was a mistake, she said. Behind the front desk of a hotel, no one could even see my shoes. They reached the oak podium, home to the phone, the reservation book, a Tiffany vase with a couple dozen blue irises, a shallow bowl of blue bistro matches, a leather cup containing 3 sharpened pencils, and a funny-looking wine key. Thatcher held up the champagne flute. This is a glass of Lauren Perrier Rosé, he said. We sell it at the bar for $16 a glass, $95 a bottle. This is what you're going to drink on the floor. I said taking this job was a mistake. We both took a gamble, he said. Please, give it one night. I promise you will love it so much, you will be counting the minutes until you can come back. If you don't feel that way, then we'll talk. But we can't talk now. Right now, I'm going to talk, and you're going to listen, okay? His okays were purely rhetorical. I want to brush my teeth, she said. Before she knew what was happening, Thatcher leaned over and kissed her. Very quickly, very softly. You're fine, he said. I detect a trace of vinaigrette, but it's really very pleasant. He held the flute out to her, and as it gave her something to do other than fall over backward, she accepted it. My father is a dentist, she said. If her father had seen what just happened, well, She could hear him now.
These are not people who floss, honey.
Adrian looked at Huck Finn, the professor, resplendent in his watch and shoes, a yellow linen shirt, and navy blazer. He did not seem at all fazed by what had just happened.
The professor kissed me. It was
really very pleasant, the kiss. The champagne is what I drink on the floor. I wear diaphanous tops and clumpy shoes.
He kissed me! No wonder they talk about me back in the kitchen.
Pretend you're hosting a cocktail party, he said. You greet people at the door holding your glass of Laurent Perrier Rosé. The first thing they'll notice is your pretty face, then your clothes, then what you've got in your hand. They will want to drink pink champagne, just like the beautiful hostess. $16 a glass, you see? When you're working the room, you should always have your flute of pink champagne. Right away, it gives you an identity, it gives you style. Your champagne is an accessory. You don't have to get tanked. In fact, I'd appreciate it if you didn't. But a glass or two, three on a busy night, sure. Duncan will fill you up.
He watched her while she took a sip.
This is great, he said. Kevin drank bourbon. Nothing sexy about that. And occasionally he deigned to walk around with a glass of Merlot. But he didn't enjoy it, and the guests could tell.
Do you drink while you work? Adrian asked.
I'm an alcoholic, he said.
He gazed at her so intently, she thought he might kiss her again. What was going on here? It felt like she was breaking one of her rules, though she was so flustered, she couldn't remember what her rules were.
Was there a rule about not kissing her boss?
Oh,
there's something else you have to know, Thatcher said. Something I should have mentioned when I hired you.
Adrian's dinner shifted in her stomach.
Something else?
He lowered his voice.
There's no press allowed in the kitchen.
Okay.
I don't care if it's the New York Times Magazine. I don't care if it's the Christian Science Monitor.
Okay.
I don't care if they tell you they have an appointment. They don't. There is no press allowed in the kitchen, and no guests, of course. I mention the press because they come here all the time trying to get a story about Fiona. Word has gotten out that it's our last year. Therefore, it's crucial you understand.
No press in the kitchen, Adrian said.
Very good. I'm sorry to be so strict.
You don't have to be sorry.
Tonight, it's friends of the house, Thatcher said. I want you to shadow me around the dining room so you learn the faces. I want you to man the host station if I'm back in the kitchen.
Am I allowed in the kitchen? Adrian asked. Thatcher looked at her strangely.
Thatcher!
Bruno was calling from the dining room. Both Thatcher and Adrian spun around to find the dining room transformed. All of the candles had been lit, and the waiters stood in a line, hands behind their backs, military style, among the impeccably dressed tables with their starched tablecloths, the sparkling stemware, a single blue iris in a silver bud vase. Behind the restaurant, the sun was dropping in the sky. Just then, a few notes came from the piano, like peals of a glass bell. A tall, mop-haired man in a black turtleneck had started to play.
It's beautiful, Adrian whispered. It was like a theater set before the opening performance, and she found herself wanting it to stay like this. She didn't want anything to ruin it, but no sooner did Adrian wish for this than a white Mercedes pulled into the parking lot.
This is it, Thatcher said. The beginning of the end.
At the Blue Beach,